Thank you very much for coming. I know it's very early and I know the weather is shitty, and I think there's about 43 more people than I expected coming, to be honest. So thank you. We appreciate it.
Please raise your hand if you're here by accident.
Yeah. I'm James Cooper. I run creative innovation at JWT, which is a very big advertising agency in New York. My job is to try and get us to do sort of slightly more interesting work. And one of the things that I always was always interested in was startups and, you know, how a big agency, we're an agency of 10,000 people around the world, 600 or so in New York, you know, how can we act more entrepreneurial? How can we learn from, you know, startups? So last year I signed a deal with David Tisch to my right, who runs Techstars in New York, so that we could help out some of the companies that have been through his incubator with some strategy advice, some branding advice, and hopefully hook them up with some of our clients. And it's been really, really interesting, and you know, we've learned a lot, and you know, that's going to continue. David has his next round of people starting next week. John, to my right, is CEO of AdStruck, which is a media buying, outdoor media buying startup that went through Techstars in Boulder a couple of years ago. So thanks for coming. These are the guys. I'll give you a couple of...
Yes, sure. Thanks again for coming. As James said, I'm John Laramie, founder and CEO of AdStruck. We're basically an online media buying platform for outdoor advertising. So much like we're familiar with DSPs and exchanges and display and other mediums, we've brought that similar type of technology to out of home, which is billboards and wallscapes. And then basically what we are is a conduit with inside the agencies to buy out of home more efficiently, because that process happens entirely offline today. And so we bring a lot of those tools together and enable agencies to communicate more effectively with multiple vendors and drive efficiencies across the current kind of disorganized workflow. So, you know, I'm living in the trenches of integrating in with agencies and, you know, excited to be here and kind of talk about what we've seen and where it goes.
Hey, everybody. I'm David Tisch. I run Techstars in New York City. Apologize for my voice in advance. Agencies pay me money to talk to my startups, so that's why I'm here, I guess. So Techstars is a seed stage accelerator program. We're like a boot camp for startups nationwide. We're in 5 cities. We funded over 130 companies. 90% of those go on to raise venture capital money after our program. In New York, we started in 2011. We funded 23 companies in New York. Of those 23, I would say about 10 of them have worked in some way or another with ad agencies to figure out whether it's customer acquisition, whether it's revenue early on, or whether it's figuring out distribution. And so sitting in New York and working in the startup scene, you see a lot of companies that are dependent upon big brands or advertisers to come in early to get their startup off the ground. And so JWT came along and signed a contract to be our sponsor last year. Since then, we've had about 10 other agencies approach us to try to work with us in different capacities. So,
and you told them all no, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so we're gonna basically tackle a couple of questions, like how agencies, clients, and startups can sort of work in this space together. You know, some hits and some misses in that space. Why it is that the media space seems to be a good sort of a good area for some of these companies to innovate in, and then, you know, maybe we'll come on to what agencies could do better to help startups, what clients could do better to help startups, and what startups could do better to kind of integrate with clients and agencies. And then, you know, please, it's a small group, so if you have questions, we'll definitely leave, you know, a decent amount of time for questions, because I think, you know, especially with Dave and John, you know, David is running Techstars, as he says, like 130 companies. He's pretty much seen it all. John, as he said, is in the trenches. You know, he's been through that kind of 2-year, okay, my company exists. I have funding. I have partners. The team is here. How the hell do I kind of make that all important kind of first step? You know, from my point of view, with an agency and with clients, you know, clients are always, they say, give me something new. I want something innovative. I want something cool. And then they're like, but we want to know that it's going to work. So they kind of want that proof point. So we're in this kind of vicious circle where it's like, you know, I think John can talk to this. We've got this really cool product. And they're like, it sounds really cool. Show me a case study. And it's like, well, we're a startup. You know, we don't have a case study. We need someone to be our case study. Will you be that person? So, John, you want to talk a little bit about how you went about getting your first client, some of the pitfalls, anything you would have done differently, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think there's two parts of our business. One is rolling up the inventory. Those are with companies like Clear Channel and CBS and Lamar. The other is actually the demand side, right? So it's the classic, like, you have the chicken and egg problem. We've rolled up basically all the inventory now in the United States, and now it's about giving our technology to the agencies to tap all that inventory and buy it in real time. And so, you know, that's the exact problem that we run into is as you go into these agencies, they're really, really excited about seeing technology for buying out of home because they just don't have it. I mean, this is a world that lives in Microsoft Excel and in PDF media kits. And dealing with a bunch of disorganized companies and workflows. So they're all really excited about this kind of shiny new technology that makes, you know, as a conduit within their agency, the ability to buy more efficiently. But getting in there is often the challenge. So, you know, majority of the agency opportunities and deals that we're working on today has been either led by myself and just building relationships, or using the relationships that I have in place with people that help make introductions. I mean, I think that's what's so much, that's even more powerful is when someone within the agency world can stand up and say, this technology can help you versus me saying this technology can help you. That level of kind of validity and credibility has enabled us to get a lot of big opportunities with, you know, agencies that we work with out of WPP and other organizations. But it's a long, long process. I mean, we are now working with a WPP agency, and I think we had our first meeting in June of last year, and they've just started to push through a lot of transactions in the last, like, 2 months. A lot of it was, okay, cool, we want to be able to work with you guys. We need to bounce around all these account teams. We need to bounce around internally with the executive team to figure out how we can use this technology, how we're going to pay for it, what it costs, all these kind of steps, but also how we're going to communicate it internally. And I think that's one of the larger challenges with being a startup and creating a technology platform that drives efficiencies within an agency that inherently has a lot of overhead and infrastructure behind it is, hey, we're going to try this new technology to buy out of home. Like, media buyers, sit over to the side for a few minutes. Like, we're going to try this out, right? So it's giving power to account teams that now can do this themselves that creates internal challenges to how quickly we can roll out and scale within that organization. So I think so much of it has come from good introductions from friends directly to people within agencies. A lot of it has just come from knocking on the door. But it has been rooted in the fact that we've proven success within some of these buys, and then we're using those as case studies to now walk into other agencies and do it ourselves. But it takes time, and I think what is important about that is the learnings that we're seeing in twofold. One is how we're pitching to agencies, and the second is how they're using the platform and what they want changed, right? So great, you have this massive WPP agency. Can you do this? Can you do this? Can you change that? We want something like this. And that's not scalable for a startup like us. I mean, we're 10 people in Soho, and the majority of everyone on the team is a developer. So, you know, scaling that within one agency organization, but then scaling that model on the business across a bunch of agencies makes it really challenging for us because, you know, they have the money and they want to push it your way and you're a startup and you want the money. And so you just bend over and you're like, yeah, we'll do this. We'll build this. And it can get distracting. But I think what we've learned so much is really about the stages in which you get in. It's the introduction. It's then the account teams. It's then, yeah, we actually have an out-of-home buyer. We'd love to do it. And then you're working with them, and then they finally push it through, and it works. But it's definitely a 6-8 month process.
Yeah. David, what are the kind of main pieces of advice that you give some of your people to get that kind of all-important first contact or that first case study that they can then...
Taking a step back for a bit, so I think there are three different ways that startups have to look at engaging with agencies. And you have to understand which category you fall into before you probably start. The first is you are a marketing tool for their clients. So something like Instagram, something like Twitter, Foursquare, all fit in the new distribution channel for one of their clients to get their brand out there, which is really falls into the be cool category. We want to be the first on a new platform. And so we had a company in our last program called Pic2, which was a photo conversation platform. And it was a natural fit for brands to put themselves on early on. And so you saw brands like JetBlue do a campaign on Pic2 because it was cool. It was new. There were a couple 100,000 users, and being the first brand on Pic2, if Pic2 ended up becoming a huge company, was a case study on JetBlue's side for being a trendy, cool company. The second category, I think, is internal tools to a core business, to a core client. So that's a company like we have CrowdTwist that graduated our program, works with brands on the brand side to do internal loyalty. So they work with companies like X Factor, Sony, to power their corporate loyalty across all their websites. So anytime you do anything with X Factor on Facebook, on Twitter, et cetera, you get points from X Factor. That's a totally different channel than it is to be a marketing platform. The other one is Contently, which works with brands to replace their content marketing strategy. So it lets them outsource content marketing. That's an internal business tool that the brand needs to use. And it's a totally different sell to a brand than something like Pic2 is, which is just a potential another distribution angle. The third is John's category, which is actually helping the agencies do their work better. And I think as a startup, you need to go in knowing which one you are, because each agency, each brand is a different risk profile in each of those categories. And if you go approach the brand that's unwilling to put themselves on a new distribution channel early, you're going to be barking up the wrong tree by going after them. So finding the lowest hanging fruit in your specific category is what I've seen yield the most success. So we were talking, one of the companies I work with was talking to Sears, and we were asking them if they were on Foursquare, and the guy from Sears looked and he goes, why would we ever be on there this early? And at that point, if you're trying to sell them something which has like 300,000 users and trying to convince them that you're just totally wasting your time. And so finding companies who have taken risk in those areas before at this point are easier, and targeting those companies as your first client rather than going up a sort of an unknown hill, I think is a lot easier.
So I think you bring up an interesting point is where, as a startup, do you realize are the low-hanging fruit that become the push points, right? Do you go to the brand and you show off your technology to the brand, and the brand then goes tells the agency that, hey, we should be using this? Because we all know that the agency world is a complete clusterfuck, and like, you know...
What are you talking about?
No? Like holding companies that like... you know, have one agency for creative for this medium and then a media buyer that does it over there, but this media buyer does it over there. And so, like, this is just this trickle. And so you don't understand sometimes who you need to be going after. Like, am I trying to embed my technology with a brand? Well, that doesn't really make any sense because the brand uses an agency. The agency uses a media buying company, et cetera. Am I trying to embed in the agency? Yes, I can do that, and we are doing that. And the reason that works is because the agency says, oh, shit, we can now do this internally instead of giving it to the media buying company that then takes forever. Or am I trying to really go after the media buying companies because they're the ones that are dealing with the disorganized workflow? And so for me, it's those last two. It's like I go after the agency and I go after the media buying company. And the agency can then pressure the media buying company, but I can also pressure the media buying company by working with their agency. And then the media buying company hearing about that and saying, wait a second, how come our agency is using this and we're not using it? And so those push points are really interesting. And the other thing that we see on the agency to the brand side is that the agencies are always asking us for our capabilities like one pager so they can put it in their new business pitches to go show off to their clients that they're trying to land, like, here's all the sexy new stuff we use. And that's great for us because then AdStruck is always out there, but it's like, who do you need to be speaking to? And that's from an agency, a brand, a media buying perspective, and then who within each one of those organizations will drive that?
So, I mean, you know, the advertising industry is in this classic conundrum where we always tell our clients, you have to innovate, you have to do something new, you have to be like this, you have to be nimble, you have to like blah, blah, blah. And as agencies, we are the worst at that. It's like, you know, physician, heal thyself. We are terrible at that. David, I was wondering, you know, I saw the 14 companies that you have coming through for next week in Techstars, and maybe 6 or 7 were in the advertising media sort of space. Why do you think that? I mean, do you think it's just not a very innovative space and so there's an opportunity for startups? Or why do you think a lot of people are kind of entering in that?
I think in New York specifically, you have an influx of people both dependent upon, if you're going to build a company that's dependent upon advertising, dependent on agencies, doing it in New York is probably the best place to do it. And so the odds of us having more startups that are dependent upon agencies for customers is higher. The other thing you're seeing is people leaving agencies. And so in our upcoming group, we have 14 companies. 4 of them have agency backgrounds. And they were either creative directors, they were developers within agencies, they were client managers. And they've been inside of an agency, been working with brands, felt pain points that they tried to solve internally. So they tried to convince someone in the agency to build a product, to do something, and they ran into walls. And we have 4 entrepreneurs who all left to start their own company and are going back to solve problems that they personally felt. And I think that in New York, just the odds of that happening are a lot higher than probably out west.
Cool. All right.
But question for you then, James, is do you think agencies realize that they can't innovate internally and so they need to be working with other people like us that are the ad tech startups?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a question like, would an agency ever create the next Foursquare or the next Tumblr? And, you know, my answer to that is always very short, no. You know, I just don't think an agency is set up in that way. I think we can do internal products, fine. You know, JWT has made little apps and stuff like that. And, you know, we have a couple of software platforms. But that's very different from creating an actual startup, you know, a business that's going to go out and make money. You know, I don't think any agency is set up for that. I think, well, you would know, you know, to do a startup, you're talking about 4 or 5 people working for a couple of years, 24/7, you know, no money, probably no healthcare, blah, blah, blah. And I just don't think many people I don't think any advertising agencies are willing to fund a group of people, you know, on their books, give them everything, give them office space for 2 years with like, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. You know, like Martin Sorrell, who's head of WPP and, you know, my ultimate boss, that's just not really how he works. So I think what's happening is there's an appetite. Like I do a talk which is called Armchair Entrepreneurs, which is this sort of idea of like, we all see what's going on in the startup world. You know, it's never been easier to start something up. The means of production are cheap. You know, sit with a laptop in a room, wherever, go start up a company. And you know, I think David makes the point. A lot of people in advertising agencies are very entrepreneurial and they want to go and do this stuff. But my advice to them is kind of either work within an advertising agency and try and partner with someone like Techstars and kind of get that buzz while you're still in your safe bit, or just leave and go and do it. I don't think there's an in-between, unfortunately. But, you know, maybe that'll change in the future, but I don't think the big agencies especially are set up to do startups. What we could do, and what I'm interested in, and David made the point, is I don't think JWT is going to make the next Foursquare, but I kind of like the idea that maybe JWT makes the first marketing program on the next Foursquare. So
like a revenue model for Foursquare?
Well, no, maybe not a revenue model, but this idea. So part of the deal that we do with Techstars is we do, I'm sure you're all familiar with how Techstars works. At the end of the 3 months, they have a demo day. So we did a kind of beta version of a demo day where we had some of the companies come in and present to our clients, which is a great thing for us because, you know, it makes us seem cool and innovative in front of our clients. It gives the rest of the agency a chance to see some of these new startups. But for me, it's like if one client says, you know what, Pick2 or AdStruck or Contently or any of those ones that are playing in that space, they seem cool. Let's go do the first marketing campaign with Pick2. Then, you know, that's a win for me. That's a win for the agency. That's good press. So I'm kind of more in that, you know, let's do a deal with a startup rather than let's create a startup.
The best way to get an agency to act or to panic is to get one of their customers to come up to them and say, why aren't we on this thing? And I think that that's, to me, the best way around the agency is to go directly to a client and get them to at least show interest in your product. And so that way you're putting together two touch points. So, James, when we did that demo day last time, how many relationships came out of that? Or was that really a dog and pony show for you to look cool? Because that's how it, you know, it comes off as the agency is doing some of this stuff so that they can sort of claim credibility of like, look, we tried, we put some cool shit in front of you, you guys didn't bite, it's not our fault. Versus like actually lining up the right people in the room to get some of this done.
I would say it's 70-30.
Dog and pony show.
Big on the dogs and big on the ponies and 30 on the kind of real stuff that happens. As John said, you know, it takes, I mean, you know, we work with very big clients. So, you know, Johnson & Johnson and Diageo and stuff like that. They are not traditionally these kind of nimble, live people that were like, hey, you know what, we'll hack off like $100,000 of our budget to do an experiment. But, you know, moving forward, you know, I have got, I mean, Chat ID went through you guys, and I think they're talking with J&J. But J&J, you know, they're very conservative. It's a pharmaceutical company, so it's going to take them a long time to do a deal with someone like Chat ID. For you guys that don't know Chat ID, it's a piece of tech that sits on top of any ad or any kind of unit on the web that would allow you to talk directly to someone. So in the way that, like, I don't know, you go to like Ford.com and you can chat to a Ford representative. If you're on a comparison car site, you know, they have this technology where you could then talk to a Ford person, or you click on like the next one and there's a VW, you could talk to a VW person. So, you know, for a pharmaceutical company, actually that's really, really interesting because you're at that point where it's like, tell me more about your product. Now, you know, they have a ton of rules about what you can say and what you can't say. For example, you know, we're trying to do Facebook pages for some of the very kind of consumer-facing brands for Johnson & Johnson, so Band-Aid, Listerine, you know, stuff that famous brands that everybody knows about. And, you know, there are currently laws which if someone says, if someone posts a comment about Band-Aid, you are legally obliged to reply to that comment because it's seen as part of the drug thing. So again, you know, they're interested in Chat ID in the same way that a lot of people are interested in, you know, buying media through the web rather than media companies. But it takes a long, long time.
And it goes back to the point Tish was making about what bucket you're in, right? Like, we're ad tech. Like, a lot of what Dave and James are talking about is brand associated platforms, right? Like the Pick2s and Contently. Like, there's big branding opportunities behind that. There's no branding opportunities behind AdStruck. It's more an ad tech. So that level of integration and the time it takes is what's interesting about that.
And I don't want to minimize the effect that a brand relationship can have on a startup. So if you take a look back at Foursquare, Foursquare, the day that they signed their first brand deal, had less traffic than Gowalla and MyTown, which were their two competitors at the time. Gowalla was based in Austin, Texas, and MyTown was in California, and Foursquare was trailing these two products. Foursquare went out and did a brand deal, And to me, that's the moment when Foursquare sort of took off. Their brand deal was with Bravo Television. If you think about what Foursquare is, Bravo TV made no sense for them. Yet Bravo had an audience, a national television audience, that Foursquare was now integrated into that pushed people towards their product. And I think that if you're a startup and you don't have money, you don't have people, you don't have time, doing something that lets you expand your reach to that level, insanely valuable. And so from that day on, they went to Bravo TV was the first one. History Channel was the second one. Again, not a direct tie to what Foursquare does. Zagat was the third one. So maybe it was the first two brands jumping on board that said to Zagat, this thing's legitimate. It makes sense for what we do. And it lowered the barrier for Zagat to enter and work with Foursquare. So I think thinking outside the box to go Foursquare Bravo as the first integration that they ever did on a brand side makes no sense. But yet it was that foresight of let's get some distribution, let's get some credibility into our product so that might scale down the line.
And I think that paved the way for Starbucks, right? The Starbucks deal with Foursquare, which was the one that made it go mass. And it's almost like if a client sees that Starbucks are doing something, then it, like you say, it legitimizes the product. I mean, I wonder, Dave, from your experience, are there any other clients that you think work well in that space that kind of look after, you know, that look out for startups and are kind of willing to try new things more than other clients?
I think mostly that each brand probably, I mean, American Express has been amazing this entire sort of weekend here. They're standing out in every single place. Everywhere you go, Amex is integrated in. And whether it's with Foursquare and doing innovative stuff on there, I think that their organization as a whole and its different departments within it just do a great job in trying out new stuff and integrating in a very true way. But I think if you take a look at each startup, there's normally one or two brands that have tried that. And if you take a step back, it's each brand has normally tried only one or two startups. And if they happen to pick the one that worked, they're going to try three, four, five of them. But if the first two that they tried didn't work, they become a little more gun-shy. And it's whether it was allocating budget to that startup, and so therefore we're not going to try to allocate budget. If it's time, resources, it's okay, that didn't work. So the next one, the barrier actually goes up. So there's probably not, other than, you know, Amex and Pepsi are the two that really jump out to me as being everywhere and trying a lot of different stuff. There's not like a guaranteed low-hanging fruit for any distribution platform. It's let's go find the one that might make the most sense for our product, who probably hasn't been burned by another shitty startup relationship before us.
I kind of have this thing where I say, you know, you have to start a lot of fires. You have to, like, in the advertising world now, you know, if I'm honest, we don't really know what's going to take off and what's not going to take off. You know, I was talking to Todd from Cheeseburger last night, and it's like, who would honestly think that cats on the internet is going to turn him into like a millionaire? You know, how does that work? How do you, as an agency pitching an idea to a client, you say, we're going to make these really like simple little JPEGs and, you know, everyone's going to be able to do them themselves in Microsoft Paint, but it's going to be really big and we're going to become a media empire. So, you know, we have to do more experiments. So I always sort of say, let's do 10 quick, cheap things and see what happens. Like, let's light 10 fires and then you see which fire lights up, and then your media money is kind of your wood. So you're like, okay, let's chuck some wood on that fire and get it really roaring. The corollary of that is you got to be prepared for 9 fires to go out and kind of fizzle. And I think that's a little bit similar to how investors kind of treat startups. You know, you've got to have that mentality of like, okay, I'm going to fund 10. One's going to do well, or, you know, I'm going to fund 100 and one's going to do well. But that one is going to offset the others that fail. Now,
but as an agency, you can take, that risk. But as a brand, to go and throw your brand, such a big brand everywhere, and not win, you look sort of dumb. So the New Jersey Nets were sitting on Gowalla with this huge, raise your hand if you represent the Nets or Gowalla, so before I offend you. They were sitting on like 6th Avenue right in front of the Madison Square Garden, which is crazy, putting a huge Nets banner with check in here on Gowalla and with a chance to win free tickets. Like, is that really the answer for the Nets? Is that the answer? So Gowalla didn't work. The Nets didn't work as a sports team. The Nets didn't work as a relationship with Gowalla. And so people will remember that. And the Nets probably become a little bit more gun-shy. So the portfolio theory as an angel investor, I can throw 50K checks into a bunch of shit. If it doesn't work, I remove it from my website. Nobody ever remembers. When you put a billboard on 6th Avenue and you have millions of New Yorkers driving by it with a huge New Jersey Nets married to this startup that shut down yesterday, people remember that. And so I think from a brand perspective, taking a lot of risk is really tricky. And so there is this balance of trying to find the right one every time versus trying to put yourself in a bunch of different spaces. So I think as a startup, the way to avoid a lot of that is to figure out ways to slow roll a brand onto your platform. And so if you're doing something like Pit2, which is this conversation stream, one of the ways to do it is without the brand's permission. You sort of go out and try to create a viral campaign ahead of the brand. And so if it works, you get the brand on board. If it doesn't work, the brand probably doesn't know much about it. And so I think there's a lot of different ways that a brand, a startup can try to engage a brand, or it's engaging a small group within that brand to do something, or a sub-brand or something like that as a test market versus a, you know, the big parent brand that's going to be the one that people remember.
I mean, just to come in, John, I think one thing that probably startups and people related with startups don't get is that, you know, ad agencies will run campaigns like, you know, you can run like a multi-million dollar campaign, like a TV ad, and it completely dies and it's terrible. And, you know, the figures are crappy. It doesn't shift any product and no one really gets fired for that. You know what I mean? Like, no one is because it's like it's a tried and tested way of working. And it's like, sometimes the TV ad works and sometimes it doesn't, but no one's really getting fired for that.
But if you went into the room and if you went into the room and pounded the table and said, we have to be on Gowalla, we have to be on Gowalla,
yeah,
and Foursquare ends up winning, you're probably not sitting on this panel anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I want a TV spot about gorillas versus elephants, and like elephants was the one, but we went with gorillas, and it's like, oh, well, unlucky, you know, let's do another TV campaign. So I wonder, like, John, from your experience, is there anything you would like agencies to do or clients to do to kind of help you? Like, what could an agency have done differently, et cetera?
So I think we're still learning, right? Because it is early for us with a bunch of agencies that are testing the platform and buying. So we're still learning, I think, what could be done differently. But I think what's interesting, because we're ad tech, right, which is a different kind of angle to this whole beast, is we're sitting within this capabilities presentation for an agency that they're trying to go land new business. Like, I'm not asking to be at that meeting. That doesn't make any sense because I'm, you know, 10 seconds of that capabilities presentation. But I wonder, like, how well you're educated on
terribly
my platform. Right,
we're educated terribly. Period.
Yeah. So you presenting the capabilities of the technologies that you guys use that make you a better agency than the other one that, you know, that client's going to see next week is, like, I think is a challenge, right? Now, granted, you know, a brand's not going to pick an agency because they're using AdStruck. It's because of 1,000 other things, but. I wonder how much, like, the agency and the startup can work together to go land new business or to present more cohesively to the clients to convince them of moving the ball forward.
Yeah, I mean, I would love for, you know, Techstars and any of the other incubators to do a sort of innovation session for clients, but also for, like, internal account managers. You know, there's a culture of wanting to do interesting things within a lot of ad agencies, but people get scared, like, really, really easily. Like, they don't want to put their neck out.
So I guess.
Well, I think thinking about an example, like, we've been talking with P&G for probably about a year now. P&G's been is digitizing basically their entire business. Like, they're thinking a lot about how advertising and content and all these things can be done better across all the various mediums and the billions of dollars they spend annually on advertising. And it was P&G that found us, that then pushed us down to one of their brands, and then that brand pushed us to the media buying company that buys all their out-of-home. And so, like, it was through those stages of watching that progress that I think that was actually the most successful approach. I think it's similarly, like, from a brand perspective, like a P&G that pushes us to tons of brands internally, like, starting at the top is great, but it's also dangerous, right? Because if you start at the top and they say no, like, you're done there. If you start with some kid that's going to be your brand champion and fights it all the way up and it goes well, like, great. Or if it dies with the brand champion, then no one heard about it, and then you can go back in and reintroduce yourself. But I think it was the progression, like, thinking about it from a brand and a holding company perspective that works well, is like P&G pushed us out to their brands and pushed us out to their media buying companies. And then thinking about a holding company and all the agencies that they're overseeing, and the clusterfuck that I mentioned earlier, is like them saying to their four media buying agencies, hey, you guys need to be thinking about this and using this, instead of me having to go to each individual four and present the capabilities differently.
So that all sounds super complicated to me. And I think that's really important to realize from the startup side, is most startups have no clue how an agency works. They have no clue who to talk to, what it takes to actually get a brand, what an RFP is. I think one of the important things that we do at TechStars is we have mentors who work with us, who come in and help our startups understand what it takes to actually move that needle. So John Steinberg from BuzzFeed is one of them, and he comes and does a talk about how BuzzFeed works with brands, how BuzzFeed works with agencies, and our startups walked away from that talk exponentially better at understanding how to go and attack an agency relationship. And I think that on the startup side is super important, is to educate. These are the moving pieces. This is how the structure of an agency works. These are like the four decision makers. But as everybody from a big company knows, you have to have people championing you all the way up and at different points along the way in order to get the consensus. Otherwise, somebody's going to risk their job pounding the table for your Diwala or your Gowala, and then your dad. And so it's this sort of two-tiered education process, one on the agency side to realize, like, the idea that a startup has to spend a year to get an agency on board. Most startups are out of money by that point, or most startups have allocated way too much energy, resources towards that relationship that they can't do other things. And there's this sort of pretty balance that needs to happen between the company and the agency, where they both understand where they're coming from and they both sort of need each other a little bit. Which is a totally unnatural thing, because neither one of them probably, like, want to take that first step or that first risk. And that's where it becomes tricky. And so it really, as a startup, is about finding the lowest hanging fruit for what it is you're doing. And if I'm a startup going out to pitch agencies, I'm going to try as quickly as I can, as many of them as I can, and then find the one that is the easiest, the one that's moving the quickest, and just run with that, because it's not worth the time unless you have enough funding, unless you have enough people to spend a year pounding the door of an agency hoping that that needle moves a little bit.
Right, and I think the point is if that agency does work, right, like, there's those big fishes out there, then, like, your business is made. Right, just like we were talking about Foursquare and their first brand association. I think when you look at it, what Tish is saying, right, is so much of this comes back to just education and understanding. And the agency world is difficult to understand, plain and simple, because of the infrastructure, because of the amount of companies and agencies within a holding company and the capabilities that each one of them is doing. So, like, the most important thing I think we did as an organization is mapping all of that out. Like, we know what brand is using what holding company, and what holding company is using these media buying agencies for these brands, for these different mediums, and, like, that's mapped on our wall at our office. And
just understanding that there are certain agencies that buy media, there are certain agencies that want to look cool by doing creative shit. And so JWT sits up here and works with us because they want to look cool, not because they buy media. And so if you're a startup wasting your time going after the creative when you think you're going after the media buying agency, you literally ran through, like, 6 months of work and all your money, and now you're out of business.
Yeah. I would say, if there are any startups in the audience, it's probably more by person rather than agency. You know, there are certain people in certain agencies that are going to play with startups, I don't think it's necessarily, oh, there's like a one brand of agency, like that's the go-to agency. I think there are people within those agencies, and it's good. As a startup, I would try and find those individual people rather than necessarily go, well, I need to be with Ogilvy, or I need to be with, you know, Droga, or whatever it is. You know, I think you could go by people. We're sort of going to, David, I just want to, you know, what do you see coming up in the next kind of 6 months? Any interesting startups within this space that you're looking out for?
I think the biggest trend that we're seeing in New York is the prosumer sort of enterprise software is starting to eat into real businesses. And so every single area of a business that hasn't been disrupted on the enterprise side is being disrupted via consumer looking like software. And so as all the people in the big corporations grow up using software like Facebook and Twitter and all these social platforms, and then they get into the enterprise and are like, what's this antiquated document management system I'm using, or this antiquated feedback loop system that I'm using? They start to disrupt those things. And so the more the tools that, like Dropbox, which started as a prosumer consumer tool, are finding their ways into agencies because they allow collaboration to happen in a way that no internal tool has ever allowed. And so I think that you're seeing more and more startups attacking that space and that revenue. We have like 15 minutes. Do you want to open it up to questions?
Yeah. Let's have some questions. Yeah. I think you have
Here's a microphone.
Yeah, you have to run up to the middle and ask us anything you want.
You're lying. It's okay. You can next question.
Yeah, next.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Terry Cavanaugh, I'm with Lokai, and we're kind of brand tech. So, we help brands convert their communities into in-store communities. But I've found working with agencies, it's a lot easier to get into an agency. But then, like you guys are saying, it's almost better to go to the brand. Do you have any more like tactical ways to go in and get that champion? Or would you sell your brand agency map that you have?
I'm happy to give it to you.
That's their revenue model.
I think it's really important that you have a really good capabilities deck, right? Like, because your brand champion needs to be a quarter of as good as you are as selling the company, right? Like, you know it, you could sell it to anyone, right? But, like, this guy, you need him to care about it, and he needs to understand what the reward is for him, not like you're going to give him equity or advisor roles or any of those kind of things. But, like, think about, put yourself in his shoes. If he champions your brand and your brand works, like he's getting promoted, like he's moving up in the agency world, right? So I think the core of it, make sure that they have enough information and a capabilities deck from you that like coherently tells what your product does and how it will help them.
Like we were helping a couple of companies that went through Techstars last year, and there's a huge difference between a deck that is going to investors and a deck that's going to potential agency partners or clients. So, you know, we were working with Simon, they would start their kind of pitch to us and they'd be like, we're like these three guys and we're on the kind of standards committee for this coding thing, which is like, blah, 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 and we have this background in it, like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, that's cool if I'm an investor, but if I'm a client, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, you almost have to have completely different pitches. You know, that, as John said, you know, what are you going to do? How's that going to make my life better? You know, how's it going to make me look great in front of my boss? So, you know, split those two, because startups spend a lot of time on that demo pitch for investors versus clients.
Chuck Fletcher with Euro RCG New York, the CTO there.
Cool.
And we have a lot of people come in and want to show off technologies. We're in the cool camp. We want to make cool stuff and bring cool stuff to our clients. Our clients usually want to own things, so they still want a place that they want. And a lot of the products we see or the things people bring to us, there's no place for the brand. It's straight to the consumer. There's no place for the brand to fit. So the comment is people need to think about how they can leave a place for brands to play. And also the other thing is the powered by model works a lot. Like,
yep,
people willing to say, brand it for a client, give that up and you know, do the powered by thing. It might help you, you know, it gives you some money and it's good for the client. So
you're dealing with these two totally non-compatible relationships. Startups are like trying to breathe air. They're trying to survive to the next day. They're trying to like get enough funding, get enough people to keep going. And you have brands here who have all the time in the world, all the people in the world, all the money in the world. Yeah. And to think that those two are ever going to just naturally click is super tricky. And so, yes, like most startups are going to go out of business. So if you're a brand trying to like take a risk on that startup, it's probably going to die. The odds of that startup dying are higher than it living. The other challenge is a startup has to make a decision. Do we put our money towards, you know, another hire? Do we put our money towards building a feature set that might be able to speak to brands? Might be able to hold a place for brands? Do we carve out a, you know, spot in our distribution platform that naturally fits brands, or do we try to force them into us at first? And I think it's this balance, as John said, there are 10 people. They're running out of money at some point, and they have to go focus on that and another. Like, it's what are we going to spend this week on? What are we going to spend next week on? And if it, for your company as a startup, is the core thing that you need to do is get an agency on board, you're going to build that product. If it's not, you're going to still focus on getting users or getting, you know, whatever the other thing that's a critical aspect of your startup is. And I don't think that there's ever going to be a moment when startups and big brands can naturally just like click, because there's a resource disparity between the two that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
The other revenue stream people should think about is APIs. So we are willing to pay to use your API. We might not want your app, but we might want the back-end coding and work that you've done, and we can say it's powered by you or et cetera. So,
it's a good point.
Cool.
Yep.
Thanks.
I run an advertising sales house in the UK. We promote independent publishers to media agencies, to brands, and to agencies. It's very similar. The independent publishers often are like startups or actually are startups. And I totally agree with your point that it comes down not necessarily just to the agency, it comes down to the person. It comes down to finding the right person who's willing to champion these ideas and who has the authority and the ability to push it through. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, because you sort of ended with that, I was dying to sort of hear, okay, how do you find that right person? How can you find that right person?
I mean, it sounds really kind of dumb, but basically Twitter. I mean, you know, the chances are that if there's an individual in an agency that is playing in this space, then they're going to be vocal on Twitter, and they're going to be out there, and they're going to be...
going to be sitting up at a panel at South by trying to look cool and sitting next to two startups. Like, shit like that is a huge indicator that they're trying hard.
Really? I mean, I think they're
silly enough to sponsor something like Techstars because they want to look cool. Like, those are the indicators. Like, as a startup, let the agency hold a sign out. Again, you're looking for low-hanging fruit. You're not going after the agency that has never stepped foot into this space. You're going after the one that is doing things and being more aggressive to try to look cool and to try to step into that space. And they're hanging up a sign and saying, look, we're trying to look cool, because that's what they're doing.
I think John made a really interesting point just a second ago, which was that the way we found it's tended to work is often you're not looking for the most senior person there. You're looking for someone who's sort of maybe a little bit junior, working their way through. And, you know, if they champion something that works, it's going to really help their career and put them on the
path.
Find those people.
You're right, because the reverse is you're going after some 55-year-old executive who wants to retire soon and doesn't really want to shake something up. Right.
So the startup's trying to live, the person at the agency understanding that their motivation is super important. So if it's a promotion, figuring out how to give them enough data really quickly in order to get an ROI on that deal is what they're looking for, not a long-term, look, we were the first ones on Twitter 4 years ago, because it didn't get them that instantaneous feedback loop inside of their job. And so going back to sort of both sides and understanding motivations is huge. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks.
Morning. Willie Chu from Thorium Digital. So we're a services company, so not like John. We don't have a product. But we're Accenture folks that have dealt with the RFPs, understand the language, understand how brands, we work with Diageo, SC Johnson, all of them. What's your recommendation how to further work with companies like JWT, Ogilvy, you know?
I mean, same. You got to find an individual that's going to sit down with you, and it's tough. Like, it's kind of like maybe there are like reps that kind of deal with that kind of thing. You see like a lady at the back of the line who's going to help you out. We're sort of getting there where there are these sort of middle women that are kind of like teeing people up, a little bit like the way that it used to work with a production company and an agency. So it always used to be like, okay, I'm an agency. I need to go make a $1 million TV commercial. There are 100 TV production out there. I haven't got time to go talk to all of them. So you have these reps that do that middleman thing. And I think there are a couple of those starting up. I mean, that's a great place to start. Or like I was saying with the guy before, you know, just look out for these, for the agency people on Twitter. They're noisy fucks. You know, they're like constantly like, ah, look at me. Aren't I cool? Aren't I amazing? So they're not that hard to find.
Should all follow James on Twitter.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, I'm Anna Callahan with Crewtide. We are a crowdsourced platform for brands to find independent filmmakers that can create episodic creative video content for them.
Cool.
And so far in talking to the ad agency people that I've talked to, the people who are the most, who seem most interested are actually from the smaller PR and marketing agencies that don't do their own video. Do you think it's, I mean, I have some connections at larger, like Hill Holiday and those kinds of people. Is it worth my time trying to pursue them? They do their own video. They're all in-house. So I just don't know if that's something that would be.
I mean, I think it depends on your revenue model, like who, obviously, again, who you're speaking with that agency. Like, are you going to go disintermediate that guy's job, right? He probably doesn't want to talk to you. But the small guys, I mean, I think you can build, depending on where you are in your business, is build a good, strong business in the small guys, and then the big guys start to hear about you because they're not, they've been outsourcing to them or not, and there's opportunities for you to integrate with them. So if you have a sweet spot, I'd focus on that. But I wouldn't. It doesn't hurt to start to have some conversations out and about to understand what that ecosystem looks like.
Thank you.
I mean, advertising is not going to go away. Like, there's always going to be advertising. I mean, I worked at Ogilvy, I don't know, like maybe 98 or something like that. We had a panel about, is the advertising agency going to disappear? And Royal Mail, this is in London, was one of our biggest clients. Royal Mail is huge, like the U.S. Postal Service. And the guy was like basically saying, as soon as I can work out how to fire you guys, as in the agency, I will do that. Like, I want to go directly to Creative Resource. And yet, you know, here we are 14, 15 years later and ad agencies still exist. But there are a number of clients, and it's going up every day, that want that direct relationship and don't want to pay overhead. So you just got to kind of like find those little niches.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey there, Brian Butler. So we're in one agency. We have two great brand case studies. What would your tips be on putting together the best case study and getting that out to other agencies?
You know, you just got to keep it really simple, like an elevator pitch style-y. You know, like a 8-page. I mean, I invested in a startup like maybe 2009. It's called Help Remedies. It's a over the counter drug pharmaceutical thing. You may have seen they have these like cool products, and they basically had a 4-page PDF that was basically they took a photo of the pain relief aisle in a pharmacy, and it's about the size of that black thing there, and there's like all these different like things you can get for if you've got a headache. And they basically said, when you've got a headache and you see that, you get more of a headache. And they were just like, here's our product, it says help, I have a headache, it doesn't look like any of the other packaging, and it kind of does exactly what it says on the tin, it looks good, it's biodegradable, blah blah blah. And I was like, okay, I get it. It's like a really, really simple idea. Like, we have the antidote to what everyone else has. So you just got to keep it, you know, like this idea of like brutal simplicity of thought, like really cut down to what's the one thing that's really going to make it happen.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
I work for an agency that in theory understands that we have to produce new products for our clients. And for the most part, it gets love with the agency, except for the one guy who goes, what if it fails? And how do I get past that?
Wait for him to die.
Sorry, what?
He said, wait for him to die. The polite way of that is to say, wait for him to retire. Or... Or you, like John says, you know, you just have to find someone who's young and is just like going to stick their neck out and go for it. And it's hard. And I try and do it every day at work. And there isn't like a silver bullet that's like, oh, it's just like one thing and we do this and it's going to work. It's this gradual, like I was saying, this gradual explanation of we're going to do 10 things. Like it's the internet. Who the hell knows what happens on the internet anymore? Who the hell knows why Justin Bieber is a success? You know, you just can't kind of like rationalize it anymore. Whereas like 30 years ago, you spend a load of money on a TV ad, you create a character like Tony the Tiger, like off you go, good, all good. Because it was, you know, there was only one way that you could do it, and now there's a million ways. So you just got to get that client or that person to understand that nine of those things are not going to work, but hey, it's worth it if we're nimble enough and we're flexible enough for that one thing when it does take off to be like, okay, that's our thing, we're going to go for it. And that's a long-term education strategy.
We have 2 minutes, so we're going to go rapid fire for four questions.
But we'll be available afterwards as well.
Quick question. How much do you guys think that the introduction of a large partner for a startup would affect our delivery message to media agencies? In our case, we're going to launch officially within a month or so. We're a social loyalty platform, and United Airlines has taken a fairly large stake, minority stake, but a large stake in our company already, which is great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we feel it could be a little bit of a curse because we need to integrate their message and their name into our brand. And is that going to create confusion in the marketplace for the agencies?
Yes.
I mean,
look, as a startup, you have to make a choice. Are you going to go chase early revenue to keep your startup alive? Are you going to dive backwards, forwards, and whatnot to get this brand on board? And you're clearly naming your startup after the brand that's paying you money or something. Like, you've jumped the shark. You went all in and said, okay, we're going to bend over and let United do whatever they want. And, like, yes, it's going to affect you. That's the choice you've made. It's a compromise. You're not going to get the best of both worlds. If you chase early revenue as a startup, you might distract yourself from your ultimate mission. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It seemed like you outlined, except for EdTech, you outlined three different areas, the buyers, the agencies, and the brands. And you described, I think, two ways to go that you think is most effective to go after the agency. One was the evangelist within the agency. And the second was the some kind of organized pitch days or some kind of organized function. Can you talk a little bit about that and the other one about the brands?
I mean, in New York, we're seeing, and literally there were like 30 of them last year, agencies, yeah, so that's the last question. So agencies doing these demo days, agencies doing pitch days, agencies calling, like the Daily News even did it, like calling for startups to come disrupt certain areas or help them solve certain problems. And as a startup, just showing up to these events, I mean, that's really...
That's the most probably organized way to go after the agencies.
Yeah.
But the brands, if besides just looking for low-hanging fruit for people who are looking to do something at that moment, that month, is there any...
Just see what they've done before, right?
If you're an agency, how do you get to the brand?
If there's something that they've done before that you think makes sense, that you can say, hey, look, we've seen you do this before. We think this is a similar parallel path. I think that's the opportunity.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much
for
coming.
All right, we got
to
wrap.
I have to run to another panel.
Thank you.
My email address is tish@techstars.com if you want to ask any questions.
There's John at AdStruck as well.